We all know your time is valuable. Whether you're hyper-focused on admin tasks like notes and billing, or simply trying to make a cup of coffee, or even run to the bathroom in between appointments, constant interruptions can derail your day. This podcast is sponsored by The Receptionist for iPad, a digital check-in system that eliminates the need to walk back and forth from your office to the waiting room to see if your next appointment has arrived. Clients can securely check in for their appointments, and you'll be immediately notified by text, email, or your preferred channel. Break free from interruptions and make the most of your time. I've been using them for almost 3 years now, and it saves me hours in my week. Start a 14-day free trial of The Receptionist for iPad by going to thereceptionist.com/private practice. Make sure to start your trial with that link, and you'll also get your first month free if you decide to sign up. Hey everyone, welcome back to the All Things Private Practice podcast. I'm joined today by Alina Carroll, who is an autistic content creator and is got a really good following on Instagram and TikTok and YouTube. And it sounds like autism is a new diagnosis and newly discovered a couple of years ago. Later in life, you just moved to Toronto from New Zealand and you've started creating content for neurodivergence and autism, working on writing a book about late diagnosed autistic women, and also looking to do a potential TEDx talk. So really cool stuff. Did you ever, one, I just want to say, did I miss anything in your bio before we start?
No, I think you've covered it all. Yeah.
Okay. So sitting here today, you know, fast forward a couple of years post-discovery, do you ever like think, man, I would be pursuing some of these things, like writing a book, wanting to do a TEDx, creating content for the autistic and neurodivergent communities?
I don't think that, I definitely don't think I would be interested in doing any of these things. It's, I always knew that I wanted to do something grand with my life.
Sure.
But that has been, that has gone down so many different avenues, but this one feels so authentic to me, and the people that I'm connecting with, it's healing me just as much as other people getting healed from what I'm saying. And so the more that I'm doing, I'm just gaining more healing. So yeah, there's a lot going on for sure, but it's just healing so much of myself and my inner child.
I love that. Yeah. And we talk about that a lot on here through a lot of different lenses and healing that inner child, right? I talk often about like the grief relief process that I've experienced with an autism discovery later in life into adulthood. And there's almost like this grief of what maybe I could have known as a child or a teenager or a young adult. I know you had mentioned like some misdiagnosis along the way and things that just never really felt accurate or like it wasn't the correct lens. And I think that feels so overwhelming, the misunderstanding of going through that existence, like feeling like I want to figure it out, but everyone keeps giving me the wrong language or the wrong label or the wrong information.
Yeah, completely. I think it's highlighting for me right now in my life what identity is and what, and so much has been broken away and fallen apart. And what am I underneath the mask? And what am I, what I was told I was as a child is not actually what it was. And so I created this video last week all around how autistic people can often go through like growing up twice, because you grow up and oftentimes you're like the child who's like a mini adult, and then you're an adult and you're a mini child, and then you get these answers and they suddenly feel correct, but you've just gone so many years. And it, there is, as you say, like a major grief that comes with it. But I mean, I'm now onto my fourth year of understanding, okay, this is what was going on. And now I'm in this place of going, okay, who am I? Who do I want to be now?
Sure.
So it's now in a excitement place.
Okay. Yeah, I like that. It sounds like a big life transition too, moving from New Zealand to Canada.
Yes.
What brought about that change? Like, that seems like a big one.
It certainly was. I first off want to say that I was someone who kind of accepted the fact that I was never going to travel, never wanted to travel. Airports, the uncertainty of travel was just, it was so big in my mind. I then had a very good friend of mine move over to Canada from New Zealand. And she essentially asked if I wanted to kind of join her over here. And so there was a safety that came with that. I don't think I would have been the type of person to just, you know, pack my bags and see how it pans out. And so, yeah, it's been the most challenging thing I've ever done. It's coming up in a few weeks, a year of me being over here, and I would say only within the last 6 months has it started to feel familiar. So sure. It's not been easy at all, but I think my rigid black and white thinking mind perhaps needed a bit of a wake-up call, and it's helped me grow in ways that I don't think staying in little old New Zealand would have helped me progress.
Yeah, it's a huge transition. And for autistic people, you know, having that massive uprooting of familiarity, comfort, routine, predictability, and then like uprooting that and really shaking it up a bit. So it would come with a lot of dysregulation, and it would take time to really get settled back into, okay, this is starting to feel like home to some degree, and, you know, feeling more and more comfortable. I just want to say I love your country, by the way. I was in New Zealand in April, and I was like, damn, is this what it's like to go through life not being anxious every second of every day of my life? Because that's what it felt like.
Oh my gosh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Is that because of the slower pace, or what did you find was different?
I think it was a combo. Slower pace. I think that like the Kiwi New Zealand culture and the Maori culture was really fascinating to me. And it felt very relaxed opposed to like being in the United States. And then I think the beauty, I was in Queenstown and like on the South Island a lot. So like, it was just so freaking overwhelmingly beautiful. And wow. Then I think also being 18 hours ahead, like by the time I woke up, right, I'm on the next day for most of my friends and family. They're all like halfway through their day. So by the time I'm eating lunch, they're going to bed. And
yeah.
The demands dropped because I didn't have to check my phone to respond to things on social media or emails or messages, because by the time I was like 1, 2 p.m., everyone was asleep. So it was really fantastic.
I think that's super interesting, actually. Yeah, I suppose so. I currently live downtown Toronto, and it is just chaos. I mean, I worked out that there are more people in just this place than there are in the whole of New Zealand. And so getting that alone time is pretty much non-existent. And it's been super challenging to find a place of peace and balance. So it's definitely strengthening the relationship with myself. Like now to regulate myself, I'm having to talk with myself, and there'll be people around, and I'm, as you say, I grew up in a place that there's not a lot of people that you're always competing with. There's nature to kind of regulate yourself. So it's just skill building right now, but it's a tough one.
I imagine so. So you've had a lot of change and transition then over the last couple of years. And, you know, for a lot of our listeners who are neurodivergent, especially autistic, a lot of them who have gotten missed or have fallen through the cracks. And a lot of them maybe were AFAB or assigned female at birth or trans or part of the BIPOC community. So a lot of these people are being misdiagnosed often and early, or scripting and masking in a way to fit in with like traditional, typical culture. And then ultimately later in life thinking like, what the hell is happening? Like something is clearly not fitting for me. So what kind of leads you to this discovery later on in life? What's happening behind the scenes?
Do you mean with my sexuality?
No. Well, either way, I was going to, we're specifically with the autism discovery, but either way, because there is a lot of intersectionality here.
Yeah, for sure. So Do you mean like what brought me to, what was the question again? I was listening to it in regards to sexuality. So
basically, what's going on in life that leads you to say, like, I'm pursuing autism discovery? What's happening for you?
I see what you're saying. Well, I think from the ages of 6 to 21, there were so many years of mental health diagnoses. And what started as just, you know, anxiety, but can manage, suddenly turning to, you know, a teenager and then an adult, was becoming depression and burnout. And now life was getting, oh, I'm not able to manage this and I actually don't want to be alive.
Right.
And so I ended up back in therapy just on the brink of despair, had to move home again. I had to quit university and I just collapsed. Just a complete mental breakdown. I kind of felt like a child again. And I essentially thought, at the rate that I'm going and the rate that my life has been going, I'm not going to make it to 30 because it's just not worth it. No one else is having these struggles, clearly. Every single month I'm breaking down, begging my mom, like, why is my brain so difficult? It's just not working how others are working.
Sure.
And so I was just in a state of despair for my life. So initially what brought me to therapy was just complete depression and not wanting to be alive. And so I saw the same therapist for about 3 years. So the diagnosis or the introduction of could this be a possibility didn't come for 3 years of seeing the same person. So it's been told to me like just how thick the mask is and how ingrained it has been. And that's why it has taken so long. But yeah, essentially the therapist that I was seeing put me in front of a psychologist. And at the time I was like, there's no way it's this, because sure. I've been to uni, I've learned psychology, I've learned about autism, and that's not me.
Sure.
And so, yeah, it eventually sunk in and I thought, okay, how the world being autism and how I viewed it is not what it is, but what does this mean if I'm autistic and no one has seen it and I can barely see it in myself, then there's got to be others like me. So yeah, essentially it's just been a long road of questioning myself and identity.
And now we are going to take a quick break to thank our sponsors. This episode is brought to you by Alma. When I first decided to go in network with insurance, I found the whole process overwhelming. I can actually remember a couple of days that made me want to cry, where I spent hours on the phone being transferred or hung up on or not given clear answers or instructions. I knew I needed to get paid, and I also knew that I didn't know if I could do this by myself. If you're running into those same challenges, Alma can help. They made it easy to get credentialed a lot faster, handled all of the paperwork, and offered way better rates than I could have gotten on my own. They also make sure I get reimbursed within 2 weeks of every session so that I know when I'm getting paid. Visit helloalma.com/ATPP to learn more. That's helloalma.com/ATPP. Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing that. And I know that's it's a vulnerable, painful experience in existence when you're constantly questioning what the fuck is wrong? Like, what is happening here? And why can't I figure it out? Or why can't anyone else figure it out? And a lot of people who are in similar boats have definitely been on that brink of, you know, just, I can't do this anymore. And it's a lonely, isolated place to be.
Yeah.
And I'm really glad that you've figured it out and were able to start unmasking. It sounds like the unmasking process has definitely been a really like powerful reclaim as well, in addition to, you know, just all of the confusion and curiosity that comes with it. But it sounds like you're also using it to really heal the inner child parts of yourself and to help other people who might be having similar experiences.
Yeah, I mean, I feel that I'm kind of regressing a little bit. I'm 29 and I feel 18 years old. And I feel like I'm finally getting to understand a little bit. Like I'm kind of going through my partying years right now and doing it in a way that feels intentional for me. Even going back to like childhood and wanting stuffed toys around me and sensory play and not feeling embarrassed or ashamed, and having the understanding of why I'm doing these things has just helped so greatly, because the reason I didn't do any of those things at the age appropriate times was because I had all these hang-ups about myself and, oh, I shouldn't be doing this and I shouldn't be into that. And it's just a constant barrage of no, I shouldn't be this, I shouldn't be that. And now it's like, I don't honestly care anymore. I just have to know who I am.
Yeah, it's powerful. And I think giving yourself permission, right, to just acknowledge that these accommodations, these support needs are things that we need on a daily basis to regulate and to be our most authentic selves. So it really becomes this like, at first, inner conflict and dialogue of like, am I going to embrace this or am I going to continue to push it away? And I think embrace it, like I have fidgets all over the damn place and I'm using one as we're talking right now. And it's just like, again, going back to my childhood, I'm like, I never had any of this stuff. I don't remember using anything to regulate. I didn't even know any better. And if I did, I don't even know if I would have done it. Like I would have felt like embarrassed or ashamed or whatever the fact may be. And now I'm like, I don't give a shit. Like I did my cabinets with my like favorite fidget in my hand because I wanted to model that we do need these things in order to regulate and that it's okay to have them. Because so often as adults, we can feel guilt or like you said, childish or whatever the fact may be. And I just want to really help normalize and affirm that too.
Yeah, that's amazing. I didn't realize that you were holding a fidget toy in your talk. That's amazing. I think as well, just to further your point, I think for a lot of the time since I've understood the diagnosis and realizing, okay, I do need these accommodations, I kind of felt as though it was a choice. Like I've gone through so many years of my life without these accommodations. Suddenly I've become aware of a diagnosis that does make sense, but do I make these accommodations or am I being needy? And I'm still trying to find a level of comfort and going, this isn't about a choice. Like, yes, you can manage and, well, yes, you can survive. But when you get home from, you know, a really loud place without putting in noise cancelling earplugs or whatever, you collapse and that's not normal. So it's not about whether you can manage or whether you can't. You can't, because a neurotypical person doesn't need to come home and collapse after that. And coming to that realization of, yes, you've done things a certain way and gotten through, but how happy have you been? Like, you need to actually acknowledge these things.
Yeah, I think we can all remember times where we've like pushed through or passed our limitations to just like mask or adhere to some neurotypical norms, only to come home and, like you said, either collapse or, for me, it typically ends up like complete darkness in my house, laying on my couch or my bed, like not able to speak or function or socialize or even get through my day. So I am like, there's a trade-off to all of this, right? So acknowledging like, how can I best support myself and do it consistently so that the collapses get less and less and less intense, because autistic burnout is pretty hellacious and I have spent way too much of my fucking life in that space and pushing past my limitations or my capacity just in order to show up to something social or work related or because I think I'm supposed to. And
yeah,
the fallout is not worth it to me.
Yeah. And there's, I think through finding the neurodivergent community online has helped me to see that there are others making those accommodations for themselves. So it's starting to normalize it a little bit more in my mind. Like if every day I'm seeing people talk about the things I'm struggling with and what they're doing to change it for them, then I'm like, okay, if they're doing it, I can too. And that's the power, the goodness of social media that I am finding. I'm not sure if you can relate to that.
100%. I think, you know, at first I was so curious because my reaction was kind of rooted in my own internalized ableism of, oh no, this can't be me. I had a million reasons why it couldn't be. And now fast forwarding, you know, about 4 years, I'm like, oh, absolutely. All of this stuff is so relatable. Or like the content I put out, I really want to put content out just to help other people feel seen and understood, because that feeling of misunderstanding or like not being seen or being too much or quote unquote lazy or, you know, needy or whatever the label is really painful. And if content can help one more person feel less alone in that, then I think that feels like the end goal for me in all of this. And it's been a journey and still have a lot of learning and unlearning to do, even 4 years in as a mental health therapist.
You're 4 years in from your diagnosis?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Must have been the same year.
Yeah.
For both of us.
I am almost 39 and I was diagnosed at 35. So yeah, it's been about 4 years and interesting road. That's for sure.
Wow. That's so interesting. Yeah. I was 25. I can't imagine 10 years on from that, especially being a male as well. Like later on, it's the younger boys that are diagnosed, but yeah, the expectations that come from men at that age, there's different experiences for both male and female.
Oh yeah, 100%. And that's, you know, the book that I'm writing is all about late in life autism discovery from the male perspective. And I'm interested to see how it plays out, you know, because a lot of the content that's put out is either by women or by trans people or by non-binary people, gender expansive people. Don't see a lot of content from men. So even though so many men are the ones who all the research was done on as young boys, fascinating where this massive gap goes, where it's like research on young cishet white boys, then massive gap of like what happens next. So it's not often talked about, that middle stage or that late in life stage. So I think it's important to just continuously talk about our experiences, and I really applaud you for what you're doing. And I know there's a lot of vulnerability in putting yourself out into the world and having thousands and thousands of people who consume your content. I'm excited to see where that leads you, especially if you're going to write this book, if you're going to pursue the TED Talk or any of the other stuff that comes with it, because I think it really does help people feel less alone. And I think that is invaluable.
Oh, thank you. No, it sounds like we're on very similar, we're wanting very similar things for our lives and what we're doing with it.
Yeah.
But from different ages, genders, experiences. I think it's so important to have all those experiences, because if you don't see someone that you relate to when you're growing up, like you just don't think of those things at all. Like that's what I was saying earlier. My view of autism was so narrow, stereotypical, you know, as you say, the young white boy.
Yep.
And so it will be so powerful for so many males, I can imagine, a whole different audience to me, but still very similar in terms of emotions, loneliness. It's these key concepts we're talking about that we can relate to.
Yeah, 100%. I think it's important to have all of these different perspectives and resources out there, because when I was a kid, teenager, even young adult, they didn't exist. And the reality is like, we need more and more people in the spaces talking about their experiences, because it's not a one size fits all experience as it is, right? Like, so It's not binary, but in reality, there are a lot of commonalities and shared experiences, like you said. So it's a cool space to be a part of right now and see where it goes and where it takes us both. And, you know, I'm definitely nervous, but excited. And I will say that that's kind of always telling me that I'm on the right track. And even as, you know, we're wrapping up, a quick aside to all of you who are listening who are mental health therapists or private practice owners, et cetera. The only time we talked about autism or ADHD in my grad school program was like a very quick childhood development course where we talked about ADHD and autism, definitely not from an affirming lens, for maybe like one or two classes. And we only talked about it from like a kid's experience, and that was it. And that was like,
wow.
Did I graduate 2015? So this would have been like 2012 to 15. And that was it. Like there was no other conversation. There was no other learning. There was no other mentioning. And so, you know, for so many people, of course, it's never immediately on your radar if we're not talking about this stuff openly and sharing experiences and supporting and amplifying autistic, ADHD, and other neurodivergent voices. And I want to just, again, thank you for coming on here and making the time to be vulnerable on here and talk about some of this stuff with our audience.
Of course. No, it's such a helpful thing to talk to other people who understand without having to over-explain myself, and subsequently the listeners are like, oh yeah, I understand, without me having to, you know, unpack all the different emotions and you know, oh, but you don't look autistic, blah, blah, blah. It's just, there's a freedom in these conversations. So thank you so much for wanting to have me on. I really appreciate it.
You're very welcome. Can you share with the audience where they can find you if they want to follow you? I will also have this in the show notes for everyone who's listening, and so that you have easy access to Alina's information.
Yeah. So basically my social medias are just my name, Alina Carroll. I have a YouTube channel that I am uploading every week, talking about different lessons and things I'm learning. And then my, my Instagram is just always trying to connect with as many people as I can. So, yeah.
Sweet. Thank you so much. And I hope you have a good rest of the day and best of luck, like continuing to orient and regulate in Toronto and getting acclimated to your new space and your new home.
Thank you so much. I need all the thoughts.
And to everyone listening to the All Things Private Practice podcast, new episodes are out on Saturdays on all major platforms and YouTube. You can like, download, subscribe, and share. Doubt yourself. Do it anyway. We'll see you next week.